Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, folks. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Today, we're going to dip into the world of coaching. I love talking to coaches. We talk to a lot of different coaches on these broadcasts. And as you know, coaching has become it's become a big profession. And there are coaches out there who can help you in almost every aspect of whatever you do, your life, if you're having family problems, if you're having problems with your business, and you name it. Somewhere out there is someone who is qualified to really help you out and improve your situation. Today we're going to dip into the world of executive and leadership coaching. This obviously focuses on the business community, and there are great business coaches out there. A lot of people need help, and I often point out that the CEO of Google often mentions and refers to the fact that he has a coach and consults with his coach quite frequently. So let's face it, if it's good enough for the CEO of Google, having a coach would be good enough for all of us, no matter what we're doing. Anyway, today we're proud to welcome a gentleman named Peter Metzner, who's the founder of Dynamic Change, Inc., headquartered in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He's an executive and a leadership coach, and through workshops, webinars, writing, and coaching, he works with leaders and managers in the corporate setting to kind of help them better understand the impact of how they lead and how they communicate. Now, communication is so critically important, and that's a problem a lot of leaders have, and they need help. As Peter puts it, when he works with a manager or a leader, usually there is an issue with morale, engagement, or communication. And when somebody is coachable, they're strong and secure enough to look at behaviors that aren't working and resolve that they can do better. He helps them understand how to bring out their better selves so they can build trust and communicate more effectively for better retention and results. Many leaders, you know, are really just, they're unable to build productive, collaborative relationships. That's so important. And as you grow in responsibility, you have a responsibility to become more aware and align yourself with what really matters. Real leaders are strong enough to get feedback. They're mature enough to own their own flaws. And they're healthy enough to accept themselves and others and responsible for how they impact with others. He believes in sustainable, high performance. And as Peter puts it, the key word is sustainable. Leadership gets easier and easier when you have trust. And finally, Peter says he helps leaders live more considered, conscious, fulfilling, meaningful lives. That's all the benefit of coaching. So it's a real pleasure to welcome him with us now. He's based in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, one of the great areas of the country. And it's just a delight to have you here with us. Peter Metzner. Peter, welcome. Nice to have you here. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Doug. It's certainly a pleasure and an honor.
Well, listen, you know, I know that what you coach and the way you coach, you do this in a number of different ways, the workshops, you use webinars, you write, and you coach in person, obviously. But I'm always intrigued when I talk to a coach, what interested them in getting into the coaching field to begin with? You know, so many business leaders have retired from, you know, their careers and gone on to coaching, but not all. Let me ask you a little bit about what inspired you to get into the coaching arena. What's your story?
Yeah, well, thank you. That's a really great question. And for me, I've been committed to doing my work. And I have been in the corporate world, and I know what it was like to suffer from a difficult boss. And years later, I even realized that I played a role in it. And I know how unhappy it is if you are employed and yet not feeling fulfilled or not having good relationships with either coworkers or boss. And I think the hard look, I had to do it myself. I'd gotten what's called 360 feedback, and the first time I'd gotten it, I realized, oh my gosh, I have a lot of work to do. But that got me to realize just how important it is to have the mirror held up to you. And when I find how important it is that I believe we all have a right to be happy and to be successful. And there's even a saying, business moves at the speed of relationships. And so I think as I went on my journey to becoming let's say, more mature, living more and more up to my potential, I find it vastly, vastly rewarding when I help folks understand some of the patterns or some of the things that they're doing that are self-defeating and help them not only own it, but work through them so that they can truly be, let's say, more successful as well as enjoy, as you said earlier, more trusting, collaborative, and authentic relationships.
Did you eventually have a better relationship with your boss when you were listening to the comments about yourself?
Yes, and I think, too, you know, there's a saying about forgiveness. Part of it is it's not about the other person. It's saying I'm no longer giving you the power to make me feel bad. And I think an important part of that is to recognize, you know, in most conflicts, each party is playing a role, and I think it's human nature to point a finger at the other and say, you're the reason I'm feeling bad. And it makes it so much easier to say, you know, I played a role in this, and that unfortunately, if I get triggered, I may trigger you, and so I'm going to react to you, you're going to react to my reaction of you, and then the worst thing is we start forming negative perceptions of each other. And I think being able to truly accept yourself and own your stuff helps you be a whole lot more authentic and genuine and thus create the kind of relationships that lead to productivity, release a lot of energy, and ultimately the byproduct on a team is you get results.
So what was it that made you eventually decide to become a coach yourself?
Well, that's a really good question. I had worked for a while for a place in Greensboro called the Center for Creative Leadership. And at that time, you know, I saw all of the things that they did as far as psychometrics, the tests, the feedback that to develop leaders. And for me, it was just fascinating. I was just so fascinated by that. And at that time, I was getting coaching myself. And in one workshop as well, I did a life review. And ever since I was a kid, I noticed themes in my life. Whatever I learned, I ended up teaching, training, and coaching. Whether it was swimming, I taught swimming. Lifeguarding, I taught lifeguarding. I got trained as a counselor, and as I was getting my first master's in psychology, I ended up teaching. And then the big aha or the big duh came up. That's what I am. I'm a teacher. I'm a coach. I'm a trainer. And then the question came up, how do I maximize that for the greatest impact? And that's kind of the process that got me to be doing what I'm doing now.
You know, that's amazing. You realized where your talents really, really were. My guess is you love what you're doing. Am I right?
I do. You know, I have a high need for autonomy, so I love being my own boss. And as I was building my business, I taught psychology 13 years at the two-year and four-year level. And that also gave me freedom. So I need freedom, and I became also something I also noticed about myself. When I'm in front of a classroom, or I'm doing a team development workshop, working with the team, or on webinars, sometimes we have 300 people or so, that's where I feel most alive, most engaged. And for me, it gives me a great sense of satisfaction when I kind of see that whatever we've worked with individually or in a group has made an impact. It just makes me feel good.
I'm really intrigued by what you just said about workshops and webinars that you conduct. I've often wondered how effective they can be, how much people can learn when they're in a group situation, and someone like you is lecturing them, talking to them. Talk to me about that aspect. I know you do this individually as well, right? I mean,
yes.
You work with, and I assume with the pandemic, it has not been in person; it's been virtual. Would that
right.
be right?
A lot of Zoom and some of the other platforms like WebEx. So here's what I found. Again, if I'm in front of a group or an audience, I come alive. And so even for fun, I get training on storytelling, and there's a local organization called the Monty, and I had gotten some training with that told stories in front of some of the audiences in Durham. That's just for fun. And what I realized, the power of story, so the content is half of it, and I think the energy is probably as much as important as the content, but people remember stories. And so I think for me, the process is how do I become a better storyteller? And one of the things that I wonder about myself is I probably in the last 20-plus years have assessed maybe close to 10,000 people, maybe done about up to 500 team programs, team development. And so I kind of see patterns, and I think part of the work is being able to, whether it's a university, hospital, manufacturing, nonprofit, you see the same patterns in personality and dynamics. And to me, it's not only fascinating, but I think part of the work is helping people become aware and mindful of these patterns that may sometimes not be optimal, so that with that awareness, they can make better choices and better align to their business drivers or the mission of their organization.
So do you find workshops can be, you know, when there are a lot of people, I mean, it could be a huge, it could be 10 people, could be a couple hundred people. Are they are they really very effective in helping change people's lives?
Well, the way I look at it is if you have a group of people, it's almost like a bag of popcorn, and some kernels will not pop. You know, that's a given.
Right.
Yet, I think if someone comes into any workshop, and I say this, too, in the beginning, you know, and also this goes with me, it's the mindset that we go into any workshop. If we come in saying, I'm going to get one or two things that's very helpful, then we probably will. But if I come into a workshop and I've had this one, I've gone into organizations, well, is this the latest training of the week? Or, you know, nothing's going to change. Or they get the training to check it off the box. Well, nothing will change. And I think it really depends on the mindset of somebody coming into a webinar. And I also think part of the equation is there's an old saying that people pay attention to their attention. So if you have, whether it be a training, team development, webinar, or coaching, if people are in pain, if their intention and there's some insight, they'll be very receptive.
Wow.
I find.
I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, Tony Robbins is very effective with groups. Obviously, if you're a good coach and you've got a good message, you can obviously be very effective with a group as well.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of the things that you notice that the business executives who are in need of coaching and who want it, what are the big things they're lacking? I know one of the things that you talk about is self-awareness. That's very critical for a leader, an executive to have. You would think they do. Many don't. Is that right?
Yes. I think a lot of times people get promoted because they get results. And so there is a certain profile of people. You know, if you look at most of the four quadrant assessments, you know, you have those that are driving. And if they overuse it, they are seen as bulldozers. And oftentimes, people get promoted because they get results, but then that doesn't mean they're going to be a good leader. And I think there's, you know, those that have the hard skills, aggressive, confident, assertive, results oriented. That's fine. But if they don't develop the soft skills, being able to listen, being able to help people feel safe to be real with them, then sometimes the overuse of that drive can actually have devastating results. And it turns out that the Gallup poll found this when they surveyed a million people, as they found 800,000 answered this, that when they were asked, why did you leave your job? 4 out of 5 said, I did not leave my job. I left my boss. And so this is why it's so crucial for people who do get into leadership to do their work and really develop the major aspects of emotional intelligence, you know, which is self-awareness, self-mastery, and the heart of it is interpersonal skill.
You know, I'm also prompted to ask you, when you do a workshop and you know, a large audience comes in to hear you, what do you talk about? What's the topic of your discussion that brings people in to hear you?
Well, usually it's the topic that they choose, and so it could be, you know, with the pandemic, I do work with a couple of EAP providers, employee assistant providers, and so, you know, they have a vast array of clients, and many of the topics are in developing resilience, parenting children during a pandemic, giving feedback in an assertive yet caring way, holding others accountable. So there's a whole range of topics that are really crucial during the pandemic, work-life balance, for instance. How do you create a high-performing virtual team? And all of these things are crucially important. And what I find is that there is a lot of pain, there's a lot of malaise, uncertainty, and it's helpful to be able to just have a source, I think, you know, to be able to get you thinking, perhaps, and help you get into the mindset that, you know, we can have creative courage to make things better, and as well as the moral courage to write to right wrongs, and to have that faith and trust that as we emerge from this, that potentially we can make things better, whether it's on our team or organization or maybe in a more global kind of sense in our neighborhoods and society in general.
Jeez, it sounds fascinating. On the other hand, when you're working with an individual who's come to you for help, you know, that's a whole different ballgame. You're really looking at what's the problem with them that's holding them back from whatever it is they want to achieve. How do you go about that? What's it like working with you as a coach?
Well, I think the very first thing is to build trust. A lot of folks that get referred to me, they don't want coaching. And I say the word refer. And oftentimes they're very bright. Sometimes they're physicians. Sometimes they're engineers, accountants, or scientists, and very smart, very driven. But then, unfortunately, as we said earlier, people don't leave their jobs, they leave their bosses. And what's even worse, if people mentally check out and stay. So oftentimes, you know, here's the equation. When the pain of not changing becomes greater than the resistance to change, change occurs. And when an organization has a leader with incredible expertise, industry contacts, and let's say a specialty they can't do without, there's that kind of equation. We can't do without this person, but we can't have another person leave or the team. You know, there's backbiting, there's gossiping, there's a lack of trust. People aren't engaged. And so that's typically the scenario that I engage. You know, it's you could say preventing executive derailment or, you know, I kind of joke, I say working with the angry executive because that individual is frustrated. People aren't doing what they need to do. So they're often referred to me, and then my goal is to quickly establish rapport and trust, and it is confidential, so nobody in the company is privy to anything that we work with except what that individual will share. And then the arrangement is that I'm here to help that person really become a successful and get what they need or what they want and have the kind of leadership and followership that'll help the team and the organization truly have good results and sustainable results, as you said earlier.
How do you usually get brought into the process? Are organizations reaching out to you directly or
individuals
coming to you?
Yes, it's usually the organization. So, again, I can only go as high as somebody who's who can be referred. So if I get with the CEO, it's because there's an active board, and even though that CEO may be getting results, there have been some behaviors that just aren't acceptable or uncivil. And sometimes I'll get the next tier down, but usually it's someone who has the authority to be able to say, you know, if we can't address this, we have to rethink this. And so that's where it is. So sometimes it's a referral from an organization. Sometimes it's a referral from some of the other organizations that do complementary work, like human resource consulting. And so the other part of it is I've been around for, you know, quite a while doing this. And what tends to happen, word of mouth has been very powerful, whereas with one success, if I helped one executive, if you think about the cost of turnover and think about the cost-benefit ratio, so if there's an executive where people are shutting down and leaving, if that person really becomes more aware and creates much a more positive and safe environment for folks to be real and hold each other accountable in a caring way, not only have we kept the turnover, not only have we kept the turnover from being a problem, but we've created that engagement. So the cost-benefit ratio is really amazing. So then the investment that the company would pay to me is truly a fraction of the savings from the turnover or lack of engagement that often happens if they don't address these problems.
You know, it's interesting. If you're brought in by an organization to work with someone in the executive level, even the CEO level, aren't they somewhat resistant to wanting to work with you or not?
Yes, they are. Yeah, so they often can be resistant. And that's why I think it's important to raise the tension level. You know, and so, again, is, and this is the way, I have a quote on my website that man's capacity for self-deception is truly monumental, and I can always tell when somebody's in trouble, here's the key word, and if I ask them what's going on and I hear the answer, well, I seem to be the only one that cares, or they're only here for a paycheck, the alarm bell goes off in my head, ding, 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 here's somebody who's unaware. So, yes, many are resistant, and we have to get over that hurdle and help them recognize that, you know, that the observer is profoundly impacting the observed, and what they're experiencing is intimately tied to the kind of behavior or beliefs that they're actually putting out.
That makes me wonder, how do you realize what they need, where they need help? You come in, you're not familiar with them. Most instances, I guess you've never met them, but you know there's a problem somewhere. With the way they're leading or what they're doing, how do you go about figuring out what to do, how to help them?
Yeah, well, that's really good. So I think the first process is the intake, and that's to say, well, what is the current situation, and what are the outcomes you want? So as much as possible, we need to have a dialogue. So it really shouldn't be my agenda. You know, with coaching, it really shouldn't be the coach's agenda, although I have a battery of assessments I often use, and that's kind of the entree point. But, to get that initial rapport, say, okay, what's the situation? What are the outcomes that you want? And then to help them, in their own words, articulate, well, what are the blocks? What's keeping you from getting those outcomes? And then this is a raising tension question. Well, if we don't address these, what's in store? And if they're already starting to be reflective and thinking, well, if I don't address these, that's unacceptable. And then usually that's when we're able to say, okay, well, that's what we're going to work on. And that's what the coaching process will focus on, even though I do believe it's very helpful to use a number of assessments, such as personality, emotional intelligence, and sometimes the 360 feedback, where we get a survey from the organization or the team of the impact of this person's behaviors, for better as well as possibly for worse.
Well, you sound like you really know this really well. I'm just wondering how much of what you discover is, as you mentioned, you focus on a work-life balance in some of your workshops. That's got to be a problem in some instances when you're working individually. Would that be right?
Yeah. Well, and this is kind of the paradox, I feel like I'm a broken record, and I am, but I do say this to so many teams and organizations and individuals, and this is really it. To be productive, to truly be productive, we need to take time to have fun, to relax, and do things that are restorative. And if you think about it, we have three relationships, really, interpersonally. We have a relationship to ourself, our relationship to our significant other or family, and our relationship to work. And if any one of those is out of balance, the other two will suffer. I firmly believe that.
Boy, no question about it. Let me ask you a question. Obviously, you've got some success stories that with what you've been doing. You've been doing this. How long have you been doing it, by the way? I know it's been a
I'll give away my age, but I've been doing this already since 2001, and even before that, I was in the field working for organizations that did leadership. I've been around the block.
20 years of experience. You've been around the block a while. Talk to me about give me some examples of some success stories. I'll get it out. Success stories. I don't mean names, but, examples of people you've worked with who had really issues, and after working with you for a while, they saw the light.
Yes, okay. Yeah. There's one recent one. I've been doing some virtual team development with an organization, and so we did, we worked with personality. We did this on Zoom, and they each got their individual emotional intelligence assessment, and then there was some one-on-one coaching. So really, three group sessions, and then one follow-up to see. And one individual who is a manager, when we did a follow-up, he said, this is remarkable. He said, I got it. I'm a lot more relaxed. I'm less controlling, less fearful. And he said, even with COVID, we've lost a couple people. Our workload has gotten up, but I'm twice as effective. Our output has actually gone up 200%, and I'm more relaxed. And he said his teenage sons even said, Dad, what's wrong with you? You're chill. What's wrong with you? Because he was so different. And I asked him, so what do you account for this? And he says, well, I'm trusting my people more. When I delegate, I trust them to do it. I don't follow up, and I don't kind of ride them, and then I don't do it if they're too slow. I let them do it, and I also trust them to figure things out so I don't solve their problems anymore. And he said that his job has gotten much easier, and his team is more engaged, and they're a whole lot more productive. So, you know, I wish I could say that happened with everyone. Everybody's different. But what I find generally, when people get it, their job as a manager or leader becomes easier and a lot more rewarding. I had one individual who worked actually in a police department in the metro area, and he had a military background, and he got referred as well. And at the end, he said, you know, I didn't realize it, that I could have a camaraderie, community. I could be happy with work and really build, let's say, collegial and friendly relationships and even be more successful. And so he found that I really enjoy my job. He was thinking of early retirement because of the stress, but he found that the shifts he made made him enjoy his job so much more and also enjoy, you know, being with his colleagues on a day-to-day basis.
Does it matter what kind of organization you're, or what industry it is you're working with? I mean, you just mentioned the police department. I never even considered a police department situation. How about
You know, I've done worked with medical schools, with universities, with hospitals, professional offices, accounting firms, nonprofits. You know, the list could go on and on. And I've been very privileged to have that. So. You know, I think that generally, you know, I work with teams. You know, this is the draw that, as we said earlier, people pay attention to their tension, and those folks who are either suffering on a team, lack of communication, lack of trust, turnover, passive-aggressive behavior, these are the ones that need it. Now, the hard thing is those are a little bit harder to work with, and it once we form a negative perception of somebody, it can be very, very tenacious. And so it's very, very hard once we judge somebody to be fill in a blank, negative in any way. And in fact, Einstein said it's easier to smash an atom than change a perception. So ideally, when a company's doing this work, when there's a new manager, new boss, new team, you know, I think the key is to help them better understand each other's styles and then already understand how they can best relate to each other. And then build, if you think, a high-performing team, they have trust, they can be real with each other, they can engage in conflict, and they are very willing to hold each other accountable. And when that happens, we go down a trajectory that can avoid sometimes the negative stories that come up from just simple differences in personalities or behavioral styles.
Wow. And typically, how long do you find you work with an organization or individual? I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. Does it go on a period of a week, a month?
Yes, certainly. Well, it depends on the person. You know, there's typically I like to have about 8 to 10 sessions with an individual, and then with a caveat, let's see how it's going. And even though it's confidential, when I'm working with an individual, I like to contact or have contact with the sponsor, whether it be the HR or whoever referred the person. And again, on my end, it's confidential, but I want to see, well, what's going on? Have you noticed any changes? And then kind of use that as data. So a lot of times it's around 8 to 10 sessions, and a number of people after that we do quarterly checkups. And so we may have maybe 4 more sessions the next year. And sometimes ad hoc as needed. What we don't want is sometimes, if you think about it this way, sudden epiphanies often disappear just as quickly. And so we want to make sure that it's sustainable change. And that's the other part of it at the end, to have them be willing to share what they're working on and have a trusted person who's earned the right to give them feedback hold them accountable. So if we can create a self-reinforcing loop in-house, then I think then it's less likely that they'll need me to be ongoing.
Peter, you're very impressive. I must admit, you know what you're talking about. Our guest has been Peter Metzner. His coaching practice is called Dynamic Change, Inc. He's headquartered in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. But I'm sure I'll work with you, you know, wherever you are in the country, via telephone, via Zoom, whatever, you name it. His website This is important. It's dynamicchangeinc.com. Dynamicchangeinc.com. Peter, thanks for being with us. You've been an amazing guest. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, sir. All right?
Well, Doug, my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
You are welcome.
A division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We sure do. That's it for today, everybody. Don't forget, dynamicchangeinc.com. Take care. Bye now.
About 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with colorectal cancer. About 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with colorectal cancer.